Well, after a week in which central banks largely gave some hope of cuts a bit sooner, perhaps, equities are pushing higher and bond yields lower. So is that the message that's going to stick? Well, we get to listen to more central bank speakers today from the Fed, the Bank of England and the ECB. But a relatively quiet start to a quiet week, although quite a bit of Aussie data to come before the long weekend. It's Monday. It's the 25th of March, 2024. It's my wedding anniversary, actually, and my wife's, coincidentally. It's the morning call from NAB. Good morning. Well, if you've been listening from the beginning, you've only had to put up with me for the last 8 years. She, however, has another 10 years on top of that. Can you imagine? So, look, it's a fairly quiet end to the week last week, but look at the moves in bond yields last week. 10-year treasuries fell almost 7 basis points on Friday. That's almost 11 over the week. But 2 and 5 years were down almost 14 basis points. But more than that, 10-year gilts last week down over 17 basis points in the UK. Compared to that, Aussie 10-year yields fell less than 10 basis points last week. Half of that on Friday. It was also a week for the US dollar. It's up 0.4% on Friday and almost 1% on the DXY over the week. The Japanese yen fell 1.6% last week. The pound down 1.1%. The euro down 0.75%, and a 0.7% drop in the Aussie dollar as well. And equities are still going a bit crazy. The S&P was down a little bit on Friday, but 2.3% up over the week. The Nasdaq climbed almost 2.9% last week. The S&P up 2.3%, but the big winner was the Nikkei, which rose 5.6% last week. And the ups and downs of oil meant that it pretty much evened itself out before the end of the week last week. But iron ore up 8.25% last week, even with a 1.5% fall on Friday. And it is Taylor Nugent on today again. I don't know what we do to deserve this, Taylor. We had you on Thursday, you were on Friday for the weekend edition, now you're back today. I suspect you secretly love it and you are paying people off so that you can come on every morning. Is this the plan?
I wish. I could only apologise that the listeners have to hear my voice again.
Well, you're not on tomorrow. We'll tell people that. We're going to give someone else a shot. So look, let's just on currencies, a bit of movement. The CNY, just sort of moved a little lower on Friday. Now, of course, despite these efforts to try and keep it higher. So does this indicate there's a bit of a policy change happening in China?
Yeah, it was interesting. Fairly quiet on Friday in terms of kind of headline news flow at the end of a busy week. But yeah, certainly some interesting moves out of in the renminbi, and that really had flow on effects and saw, you know, a bit of a broader based appreciation in the US dollar, and the Aussie and the Kiwi depreciating a little bit in sympathy with the renminbi as well. What we saw was that there was a weaker than expected daily fixing, which is one of the tools that the authorities in China use to kind of manage the currency there, and they had been kind of leaning against any further depreciation in the currency by using that tool. And then a weaker than expected fix on Friday maybe showed some cracks in the resolve of authorities to kind of stem further depreciation in the renminbi. So, you know, the onshore CNY had been just shy of that key 7.2 level, you know, for most of the year. And with that weaker than expected fix on Friday, we did see it kind of move quite sharply above that level. USD CNY, the renminbi weakening, USD CNY up around 0.4% to 7.23%. On Friday, and it probably hadn't been above that 7.2 level since November. And I think, you know, this was on the back of some comments late Thursday by the PBOC deputy governor, who suggested that there was room for some further cuts to the triple R rate, which is one of the tools in the PBOC's chest there, and also mentioned that, you know, there were other tools at its disposal as well. So I think those things in combination certainly suggested that maybe that trade-off that policymakers have been making between trying to tread this balance between, you know, some further easing in monetary policy to support growth without seeing a further depreciation in the renminbi, maybe there's a bit of a shift in strategy there. And so, you know, we did see a bit of a pretty notable move in currency markets on the back of that.
So it was a big week for central banks, of course, last week. So if we were to look for one word, I'm thinking it would probably be later, wouldn't it? I mean, equity markets are reacting as though it's all good news. And I guess it is, because the expectation is for cuts, but perhaps a bit later seems to be the indication, by and large.
Yeah, I mean, certainly potentially out of the US, but I think overall for me, it's probably sooner. If anything, if you were gonna sum it up in a direction, there was kind of, you know, broadly across the central banks that we heard from, there seemed to be a bit more comfort that, you know, those second round effects that people were worried about, that stubbornness in inflation, maybe some of those concerns are receding. And they're now just kind of looking to the timing of cuts from the FOMC. Obviously, they kept those three dots in the median. And kind of, you know, certainly you can look in the market reaction there to suggest that maybe there were concerns that there would have been a bit of a more hawkish pushback and a bit more signal taken from those recent inflation prints. Then over in Europe, you know, the ECB didn't meet, obviously, but we had Lagarde kind of reconfirming that, you know, knowing a little bit more by April, knowing a lot more by June, and so still kind of looking towards June as the timing of a potential cut. And then, of course, in the UK, we had those two more hawkish members of the MPC drop their votes for a hike. And we saw some comments on Friday from the BOE's BOE's Bailey in an interview with the FT as well. And he was just making the point that he was, you know, seeing encouraging signs and that, you know, the global shocks are unwinding, not seeing a lot of sticky persistence in inflation coming through at the moment. And all of that meant that, you know, he concluded that the fact that we have a curve that has cuts, plural, in it for the year as a whole is not unreasonable to me. And so I think all of those things together suggest that, you know, despite some good news on, you know, signs of resilience, maybe a little bit of a recovery in some activity indexes in Europe and the UK in the, you know, heading into the first quarter of 2024, that kind of positive signs that inflation can continue to improve and they can be looking to cuts by, you know, mid-year. Markets currently pricing over 80% chance of a cut in June from the BOE now is possible.
Yeah. Okay. So that is a move forward, isn't it? But the Fed, well, not really. So, I mean, yeah, three cuts now, we've sort of consolidated on that, haven't we? Although you've still got people like Fred Bostick saying, well, you know, maybe we're just going to have one cut later in the year, back end of the year.
Yeah. So Bostick speaking Friday, confirming that he did have two dots in the December projection, two cuts in the December projection, now has one cut in the current projections as well, and just kind of concern about the breadth of price rises in inflation. So, you know, a little bit against the grain on the more hawkish side of the projections out of the FOMC there. And worth noting as well, he was speaking quite late in the US on Friday. So those headlines hitting the screen kind of after we saw that kind of movement down in yields through the day on Friday. But, you know, declaring his hand there, not too much of a change in view from him. So I'm not sure there's too much surprising in those comments anyway.
And was there anything surprising in the Australian Financial Stability Review from the RBA on Friday? I mean, they used the word resilient. I think they've used that before. They said, you know, financial stability risks remain elevated. I'm sure they've said that before as well. I mean, they have flagged concerns about China, in particular the property sector, and how that might spill over to the financial system globally and Australia in particular. But I mean, we've heard all of this before, haven't we?
Yeah. I don't think there's too much new from the FSR. More broadly on the RBA, just, you know, in the context of that broader discussion on central banks we had as well, you may have been inclined to put them in the bucket of a quick shift. But then, of course, we saw that that change in guidance to not ruling anything in or out. Don't think there was too much meaningful in that. Still concern about stickiness in inflation. And then, of course, the employment data later in the week was showed why we think it will take some time for the RBA to be comfortable cutting. And so, you know, that suggests late this year at the earliest. And I think, you know, when we look at when we look at the FSR, you know, if we're thinking about the RBA's near-term policy outlook, we're never going to learn too much from this. It's kind of more of a broader statement. But I think the key things are there that, you know, they mentioned the strength in households and business balance sheets going into facing some of the challenges at the moment as a source of resilience, and did do a scenario as well where they looked at how households and owner-occupied variable mortgage holders specifically would fare with another 50 basis points of tightening and a cash rate that holds at in those restrictive levels for longer than assumed at the in the February SOMP forecasts. And the conclusion there was that while it's obviously difficult for some households, the share of households with a variable rate mortgage who are experiencing negative cash flow would rise from about 5 to 6% at its peak. But then, you know, that would still be declining with wages growing faster than inflation over the next couple of years. And it was also importantly making the point that it's only about half of those experiencing negative cash flows that would be at risk of falling behind on their mortgage until the end of 2025, just because of how far ahead on repayments a lot of households are. And so, you know, while the RBA noted challenges for specific households there, you know, there's no financial stability reason or concerns in them tightening a little bit further if they need to. Of course, that's not our view. We think they'll stay on hold here while they kind of can see progress back towards target.
Yeah, well, I think a lot of people have been hoping that they don't, weren't they? So other data for Friday, UK retail sales, not as bad as it could have been. Pretty flat, wasn't it, really? I mean, it's fair to say that, you know, it's been raining basically perpetually since Christmas in the UK. So that might have impacted sales as well, apart from sort of like galoshes and rowing boats, perhaps. Canada's retail sales, take out cars, month on month, it was up 0.5%. The expectation was it was going to fall 0.4%. These are January figures, of course. And we've learned, haven't we, everywhere around the world, you've got to be a bit cautious about those months around Christmas.
Yeah. So both Canada and the UK a little bit better than expected. The UK there, yeah, flat in the month. A fall of 0.4 was expected. That comes after a pretty strong rebound in January, which, you know, may have been some of those shifting seasonals you mentioned there. But I think broadly, given the wet weather that you mentioned as well, this is, you know, a good start to the year for UK retail sales, and certainly suggests that it'll probably be adding to growth in Q1 rather than a drag. And, you know, a bit of a positive sign, I think, that kind of, you know, technical recession, that kind of negative growth seen in the UK in the back half of 2023, the retail sales data at least suggests, you know, a bit of a better start to 2024. Yeah.
So Japan's core CPI as well, 2.8% year on year in February. That's what was expected, up from 2%. So does this sort of explain the Bank of Japan's response last week?
I mean, no surprises there. That fresh food measure, as expected, at 2.8 headline, and the core measure that excludes energy as well, actually a tenth below forecasts. But what we saw is, you know, a bounce up from inflation rates around 2%. That's just on base effects. Under the hood there, you know, the BOJ, there's nothing here to suggest that they need to be, you know, embarking on a quick tightening cycle, which is no surprise. They're watching this data for kind of, you know, further evidence of firming in inflation that could mean that they need to kind of adjust policy going forward. But we've heard from Ueda last week that, you know, they're still going to keep financial conditions accommodative. They're still supporting the economy, and it will be up to the data to see whether they do respond by kind of, you know, inching policy rates a little bit higher over the course of this year. We obviously get Tokyo CPI on Friday as well, which is a bit of a more timely read. And that's expected again to show kind of service inflation kind of bubbling along around 2% under the hood there. So, you know, much better than it has been in Japan, but, you know, nothing to stress the BOJ too much that this is kind of getting away from them.
Yeah. German IFO as well, very quickly, their business climate actually picked up a little, didn't it? So from 85.7 to 87.8, that's how they see things now. So less pessimism. You know, an improvement in the current business situation, which is actually the business climate read is actually the highest it's been since last May. So good news there. Christine Lagarde is talking today, but I think she's talking in a closed session, isn't she? She's talking about climate change, so probably not much we can take out of that. But Catherine Mann from the Bank of England, the Fed's Bostic, we've already mentioned, he's back on again as well. So a few central bank speakers out in the next 24 hours.
Yeah, reasonably quiet start to the week, but yeah, a couple of central bank speakers to watch out for there. I think Mann will be interesting. Obviously, she had been voting for a hike for a while, dropped that vote last week. We've already heard from Bostic, so maybe not too much to learn from him. And we've got ECB's Holzman on the calendar as well. But yeah, other than that, quiet start to the week. Only new home sales, Chicago Fed activity index, so second tier data out of the US as well.
And a short week, so we get Aussie CPI, retail numbers, and job vacancies. So a bit of Aussie data this week and US PCE, but only 4 days this week.
Shorter week, but plenty of Australian data to look at. You know, it's reasonably quiet looking across the globe. We've got PCE data, obviously the key, that's on Friday, so the full market reaction to that might be difficult to gauge until next week, with being Good Friday. In Australia, though, CPI indicator on Wednesday, the big one, that's got a better coverage of services, and so the RBA will get kind of a bit of a better hint about that domestic inflation impulse out of that data. We expect the CPI index to show inflation of 3.6% year on year, up from 3.4%. But the ex travel and volatiles number, we expect kind of to continue inching lower. We're at 3.8% from 4.1% on that one.
Well, that is the big one to watch, isn't it? Those CPI numbers, those are, as we say, other Aussie numbers as well. But we'll leave it there for now. Good to talk, Taylor. Catch you next time.
Thanks, Phil.
Not too soon, I hope. And I mean that in the nicest possible way. He's got to have a day or two off, hasn't he? And that's it from me. I'm Phil Dobby for NAB. I am back again tomorrow morning, of course. I'll see you then. Enjoy your day.